1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock bands. I'm Red Beard, and today in the studio, it's a lap around the track flat out with some of the very best of the Cars.
You might think I'm
Hi, this is Rick Ocasek.
Hi, this is Greg Hawks in the studio for the Cars.
Certainly one of the most anticipated career anthologies was the complete original Elektra Records box set of the Cars, remastered with terrific sound and receiving rave reviews from fans since its spring 2016 release. Now that the fleet of the original six Cars studio albums and an earlier Greatest Hits package have been hot-rodded down to a generous 18-song best of by the members of the band into something called Moving in Stereo, the best of the Cars. The Cars were consistent in their components over the approximately 10-year course of the original five-man band, and the drivetrain always was powered by the songs of Rick Ocasek.
Every band that I ever had, I kind of wrote the songs for, and that's kind of why I had bands. It wasn't to be a musician in a band or a part of a band. It was more to, you know, get the songs done.
People like Bob Dylan, and always bands that I appreciated the lyrics of, and somewhat, you know, raunchy, heavy bands. You know, Iggy and the MC5, a whole slew up until another period of time. Songwriters like, you know, Buddy Holly. Originally, because I felt he was the only one who was writing songs, and I loved his melodic sense and everything. So he was very, very much an inspiration.
Since you're gone, well, the moonlight ain't
since you're gone.
Since you're gone.
Rick Ocasek doing the lead vocal on Since You're Gone from the Cars' fourth album, Shake It Up. Growing up in the Ocasek household, early 1960s Sputnik and Telstar technology combined with real Cold War James Bond intrigue for Rick, courtesy of his father.
He was a systems analyst for NASA, and in the early days too, actually probably way before the first moonshot, but up including, you know, maybe that time. And, you know, he did relatively secret work, and so we had a pretty secret father, you know.
I think that's like
brought home black books that were locked and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Seriously. So in your home, there was things where the kids couldn't go and things you weren't supposed to see kind of thing.
Well, there was definitely books around that were locked.
There was
government people coming over to the house sometimes. They'd interview my mom about whether he talked in his sleep.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I even found it interesting to read a lot of stuff about, at one point in my life, about spies. It was intriguing that, you know, a lot of things, government policy and world affairs, are really kind of run by spies. And not so much our government. A lot of decisions are made, like, you know, under the table. And I found that interesting politically.
Every single musical hallmark of what would quickly be known as the Cars sound is evident. The catchy simplicity of Rick Ocasek's songwriting, the half-spoken, halting, unconventional lead singing, the insistent, unwavering, straightforward beat by former Jonathan Richman Modern Lover drummer David Robinson, the quirky, campy, reedy organ, and the economical yet inventive lead guitar. Long before the tall, lanky Rick Ocasek strode across a concert stage and became a rock star, Rick was a science geek in the basement.
And technology always interested me. I mean, I probably at the same time as he was at NASA, I was like building radios in the basement and stuff like that. So maybe they thought I was sending over some info I shouldn't be or something, because I had a pretty heavy setup down there. I used to be able to, you know, 2,000-watt single sideband, you know, transmitters and all that stuff when I was like 14 years old.
Wow.
I was just going to say he dismantled it.
Dad said, Dad was afraid you were going to reach behind the Iron Curtain, huh?
He dismantled that stuff.
Shake it up. 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 Shake it up.
title song to the Cars' 1981 album Shake It Up has now been included in Moving in Stereo, The Best of the Cars. The Cars joined the Rolling Stones' Miss You as being the first to bridge the considerable gap between the factions of disco versus rockers.
I think you should be able to dance to every song. I always thought moving to a song was part of the mental attitude one should have. Not necessarily, prescribed sort of dance steps, but basically movement. I always thought the things were rhythmic in a way that you could dance to, even if they were ballads.
After the original Cars had parked their career, I read where Rick Ocasek said that the Cars' sleek, polished, chrome and glass sound was a byproduct of the musical limitations of the various band members at the time. Cars keyboard player Greg Hawks weighs in.
Well, Elliot and I both went to Berklee Music School here in Boston for, well, in my case, for 2 years, and Elliot's case, I don't know, a year or two. I don't think we were sort of thinking along that lines as a group. It wasn't like, okay, guys, when you go home, don't practice because, you know, you're just going to screw up the band. You know, there wasn't anything like that. I know what he means by that statement. I always tried to operate under the philosophy of simpler is better and less is more. It's often harder to play fewer notes.
I just remembered him being having a great sense of humor, being, you know, very smart and very musical. Like, his musical style was different than any his approach to keyboards was different than any bodies I had heard. Up to then, it was either Fender Rhodes or, you know, something, maybe an organ. But Greg's approach was definitely more novel, and his musical sensibility was amazing. He always had, you know, great hooks and great counter melodies. Some of them could have been based on, you know, classical music. Some of it could have been based on, Frank Zappa. It could have been from anywhere. But he was also very simplistic. He didn't overburden tracks, you know. Well, he had a pretty lush sound when he wanted to. But, you know, I just appreciated his whole thing, personality and everything.
We'll be right back. One thing that the Cars did better than anyone was combine distinctive instrumental sounds from rock and roll's past and combine them all to paradoxically sound cutting-edge modern. Greg Hawks explained how he did it.
Well, in my case, I had it was a Vox Continental organ that did it. It's, you know, like one of those red organs with the, and the color of the keys are reversed, where the white keys are black and the black keys are white. I'm trying to think of who used them before. And strangely enough, the only sort of group that pops into my mind is, I think, Paul Revere and the Raiders. But I'm sure there were others. I think I was influenced with that particular organ sound by the first Elvis Costello record, with like Watching the Detectives. That guy, what's his name? Steve Naive. So that was sort of, you know, I think a direct influence on me personally, to kind of seek out that sound maybe. I think it sort of has more to do with just sort of the way we play and the arrangements sort of that the band came up with sort of is as responsible for the band's sound as the production itself. Not to take anything away from Queen or Journey. I don't mean to imply that. But Roy actually had very little to do with the musical arrangements themselves. Those were fairly well worked out, you know, by the band ourselves, you know, before we even went into the studio. With the Cars, I kind of hear Roy's influence predominantly in the just the sound of the guitars, the big guitars, the drum sound, and the big background vocals. He really started us on the road to the big background vocals. I guess after having worked, I guess what, the Queen album with Bohemian Rhapsody was the one that he did right before the Cars' first album. So how could you not do big vocals?
You
Somehow, Cars lead guitarist Elliot Easton managed to serve Rick Ocasek's songs with tasty, melodic, economical guitar solos while changing up his style practically on every recording. Rick Ocasek agrees that Easton is probably overlooked and underappreciated simply because Elliot Easton knew his role in the Cars. Here's Rick Ocasek.
Well, Elliot was a unique guitar player always. When you hear a lot of guitar players and you have a lot of bands and you go through 15 of them and you see them in other bands, you know, I mean, there's a lot of great ones and, you know, but there's like a style that's very hard to develop, you know, until you eventually find some style. And I think Elliot had a great melodic style. He was good at also good counter lines and, you know, simplicity. And he seemed versatile to play anything. And he was also brilliant and pretty funny, I thought. You know, he was one of the funniest people in the band as far as coming up with a great, funny, sarcastic remark or something. Very well-read and extremely smart person who played guitar, you know, economically and very good.
The sun fell down. You kept it going.
Still to come, Rick Ocasek pays tribute to his longtime friend and Cars co-founder, the late Benjamin Orr. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Rick Ocasek and Greg Hawks. The Cars 1984 model, Heartbeat City, turned out to be their most high-performance edition, with the 80s most successful producer Mutt Lange in the pit crew. One of the most popular songs of the whole 80s decade comes from Heartbeat City, sung by the late Benjamin Orr, who died of pancreatic cancer in 2000. His friend and Cars co-founder Rick Ocasek remembers the first time he heard Ben Orr sing.
He sang a couple Beatles songs at that point, and he also sang that Lenny Welch song, Since I Fell for You, which is pretty hard to sing, I think. And he sounded beautiful singing that on acoustic guitar. After that, we just we jumped right into bands. You know, we tried to form bands, and we just, you know, did songs we wrote, basically. You know, got on stage and wrecked equipment and, you know, tried to be like as rash as possible. It wasn't until years later when Ben and I went to Cambridge, Massachusetts, that we actually honed in on just us two singing together and stuff like that, because we played for a couple of years in Cambridge at folk clubs and things acoustically. So we kind of got our singing together that way. We did an odd assortment of material. Actually, it was all our own, but it was very odd to be playing in folk clubs, but we did it anyway.
Who's gonna tell you when it's too late? Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. What else? Who's gonna drive you home tonight? Who's gonna pick you up when you fall? Who's gonna hang it up when you call? Who's gonna pay attention to your when you scream? You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. Who's gonna drive you home tonight?
Benjamin Orr singing Dry from the Cars' Heartbeat City in 1984, one of MTV's biggest videos that year. The Cars' zero to platinum popularity came amidst the dying embers of the punk rock spasm, and at least one rock writer tried to compartmentalize the band and the sound that survived with the one-size-fits-none term new wave. To this day, at least one respected music resource begins their entire section on the Cars with, and I quote, The Cars were the first and most successful new wave group. I asked the Cars keyboard wizard Greg Hawkes if that label helped or hurt.
I don't know, probably both. I think it probably hindered. Well, I don't know. I think it's negative in the sort of context that it sort of ties you in to a certain period of time. It's like, you know, it's like whenever you think of the Sex Pistols, you're going to think of punk rock. You know, I'd rather not necessarily be always thought of, oh, the Cars. Well, yeah, they were the first and most successful new wave group. There's just something about, you know, being lumped in with a genre or a label that is just confining.
And same question for the Cars singer-songwriter Rick Ocasek. Were the Cars the first and most successful new wave group?
I don't think so. Because I don't think any of those terms are accurate anyway. I just think we were around at that time, but I guess we were in any category they wanted to fit us into at the moment, you know. And I guess New Wave was safer for America. We were certainly weren't punks. I mean, we weren't guys, you know, who crawled along, you know, who were on the streets, you know, kind of a band. So we obviously weren't juvenile delinquents, which was like what punks were or what, you know, punks became. In retrospect, that's all just sort of fashion stuff, you know. That's just fashion labels. Well, put it in a convenient time period for people to remember. You know, now people don't have to think about it. They can just lump it into a era. So I think as far as, like, having people remember it, I mean, you know, New Wave, I don't know. I don't know if it, like, got anybody's hair up on the back of their neck or not, you know. There was probably a difference between New Wave and punk. Maybe New Wave people wore cleaner clothes, I don't know.
Hush about the song lasting. A glossy mouth, taste untamed, a moving carousel up and down, just like you. Oh, baby.
Why can't I have you? Always break.
Even when I first was with the Cars, I delved into producing some things like Romeo Void and the Bad Brains. I started doing a bunch of local bands when I had a studio in Boston. And I've always loved that part of it. I always feel like it's a nice advantage for me to have been a songwriter and be a person who was in a band. And then lend a hand with the band that had and and you know, just get in there and be like more of a band person with a band rather than like a producer. So just my love of music and everything that's new. I feel like the bands that I've done have you know, good lyrics, are credible, you know, credible artists, and there's a certain criteria.
How did helping others affect your own music and your own desire?
Well, it's nice to see. New bands are usually not jaded at all, whereas I'm probably relatively jaded about lots of things in music, lots of business things possibly, and just the general state of music. So it's nice to see, you know, new bands who have no idea what's going to happen to them, and you know, feel motivated and you know, want to go for the future and feel good about their music. So that rubs off. That's nice. That keeps me from getting too, you know, sour about, like, you know, the state of the business.
So they helped you find the idealism maybe that made you do this in the first place?
It's kind of the same idealism. Yeah, it's the same idealism, and that's good to see that, you know, people still feel that way.
Fashion. The black water feels alright.
with that lyrical lead guitar break by Elliot Easton. With 10 top 30 hits and over 25 million copies in the U.S. sold. Keep the motor running. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Rick Ocasek and Greg Hawks. Today's edition is dedicated to the late Benjamin Orr. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.